You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on the gifts of imperfection. More wisdom and less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Note on the gifts of imperfection. Let go of who you think you're supposed to be and embrace who you are, by Brené Brown. As always, let's kick it off with a quote. Wholehearted living is about engaging in our lives from a place of worthiness. It means cultivating the courage, compassion, and connection to wake up in the morning and think, no matter what gets done and how much is left undone, I am enough. It's going to bed at night thinking, yes, I am imperfect and vulnerable and sometimes afraid, but that doesn't change the truth that I am also brave and worthy of love and belonging. Wholehearted living is not a one-time choice. It is a process. In fact, I believe it's the journey of a lifetime. My goal is to bring awareness and clarity to the constellation of choices that lead to wholeheartedness, and to share what I've learned from many, many people who have dedicated themselves to living and loving with their whole hearts. Before embarking on any journey, including this one, it's important to talk about what we need to bring along. What does it take to live and love from a place of worthiness? How do we embrace imperfection? How do we cultivate what we need and let go of the things that are holding us back? The answer to all of these questions are courage, compassion, and connection, the tools we need to work our way through our journey. End quote. That is Brené Brown from The Gifts of Imperfection. Reading Brené Brown's books makes you feel safe. Well, actually, they make you feel a little freaked out as you look into some areas you may not like to look, like vulnerability and shame, but ultimately, they make you feel more of the three qualities she advocates and models so powerfully: courage, compassion, and connection. And in the process, like you've come home to yourself. And that's awesome. If you haven't checked out Brené's work yet, check out her TED Talks. We've got a couple of links in the PDF, plus her great website, BrenéBrown.com, and check out our note on another one of her great books, Daring Greatly. Her work as a shame and vulnerability researcher led her to discover people who had figured out the keys to shame resilience in what she calls wholehearted living. Think half-hearted, kind of sort of going through the motions, versus wholehearted, all-in, joyful living. This book walks us through the 10 guideposts of wholehearted living. It's a quick reading, fun, inspiring, and wise little book that I highly recommend. Let's jump in with a quick look at the do's and don'ts, plus the guideposts to rocking it. Then we'll explore some of my favorite big ideas. All right, the first big idea, do's and don'ts of wholehearted living. I had a lot of questions about wholeheartedness. What did these folks value? How did they create all of this resilience in their lives? What were their main concerns? And how did they resolve or address them? Can anyone create a wholehearted life? What does it take to cultivate what we need? What gets in the way? As I started analyzing the stories and looking for reoccurring themes, I realized the patterns generally fell into one of two columns. For simplicity's sake, I first labeled these do and don't. The do column was brimming with words like worthiness, rest, play, trust, faith, intuition, hope, authenticity, love, belonging, joy, gratitude, and creativity. The don't column was dripping with words like perfection, numbing, certainty, exhaustion, self-sufficiency, being cool, fitting in, judgment, and scarcity, end quote. Early on in her research on wholehearted living, Brené threw together that list of do's and don'ts. She described, in her wonderfully, playfully vulnerable way, how she stepped back and gasped, realizing that she lived in the don't list. Super funny. So that led to what she calls her breakdown, which she crosses out and calls a spiritual awakening. She's always really funny. She writes breakdown, writes a line through it, then describes it as spiritual awakening. So it wasn't a breakdown. It was a spiritual awakening, or maybe it was both. But anyway, that led to what she calls her breakdown / spiritual awakening, which led to her continued research on an embodiment of the wholehearted principles, which led to all the wisdom goodness we now enjoy from her. Such good stuff. All right, the next big idea is the 10 guideposts. Quote, all of the guideposts are interconnected and related to each other. My goal is to talk about them individually and collectively. I want us to explore how each of them works on its own and how they fit together. So let's look at the guideposts really quickly. These are amazing in themselves. It's really a table of contents. But these are the qualities that we want to cultivate in order to live more wholeheartedly. Guidepost number one, cultivating authenticity, letting go of what people think. Guidepost number two, cultivating self-compassion, letting go of perfectionism. Guidepost number three, cultivating a resilient spirit, letting go of numbness and powerlessness. Number four, cultivating gratitude and joy, letting go of scarcity and fear of the dark. Guidepost number five, cultivating intuition and trusting faith, letting go of the need for certainty. Guidepost number six, cultivating creativity, letting go of comparison. Guidepost number seven, cultivating play and rest, letting go of exhaustion as a status symbol and productivity as self-worth. Guidepost number eight, cultivating calm and stillness, letting go of anxiety as a lifestyle. Guidepost number nine, cultivating meaningful work, letting go of self-doubt and supposed to. Guidepost number 10, cultivating laughter, song, and dance, letting go of being cool plus always in control. So each of those guideposts has its own chapter. Let's take a quick look at some of my favorite big ideas. The next big idea is practicing the gifts of imperfection. Quote, practicing courage, compassion, and connection in our daily lives is how we cultivate worthiness. The key word is practice. Mary Daly, a theologian, writes, courage is like, it's a habitus, a virtue. You get it by courageous acts. It's like you learn to swim by swimming. You learn courage by couraging. The same is true for compassion and connection. We invite compassion into our lives when we act compassionately toward ourselves and others, and we feel connected in our lives when we reach out and connect. To recap, wholehearted living is ultimately about worthiness. We cultivate worthiness via practicing courage, compassion, and connection. Note the key word, all caps, practice. If we want to master any skill, what do we need? Practice, practice, practice. Plus, more practice, practice, practice. Not so much the occasional burst of inspired activity, but the day-to-day embrace of the little and big moments to do the work. I love the way Brené plus Mary frame it above. And I love George Leonard's thoughts on practice in Mastery. See those notes. He tells us, quote, a practice, as a noun, can be anything you practice on a regular basis, as an integral part of your life. Not in order to gain something else, but for its own sake. For a master, the rewards gained along the way are fine, but they are not the main reason for the journey. Ultimately, the master and the master's path are one. And if the traveler is fortunate, that is, if the path is complex and profound enough, the destination is 2 miles farther away for every mile he or she travels. End quote. One of my favorite passages. Here's to practicing courage, connection, and compassion. Next big idea. Ordinary courage. Quote, I realized that courage is one of the most important qualities that wholehearted people have in common. And not just any kind of courage. I found that wholeheartedness requires ordinary courage. Here's what I mean. The root of the word courage is cor, the Latin word for heart. In one of its earliest forms, the word courage had a very different definition than it does today. Courage originally meant to speak one's mind by telling all one's heart. Over time, the definition has changed, and today, courage is more synonymous with being heroic. Heroics is important, and we certainly need heroes, but I think we've lost touch with the idea that speaking honestly and openly about who we are, about what we're feeling, and about our experiences, good and bad, is the definition of courage. Heroics is often about putting our life on the line. Ordinary courage is about putting our vulnerability on the line. In today's world, that's pretty extraordinary. End quote. Courage. I knew the word came from the Latin for heart, but I'd never heard the earlier definition, to speak one's mind by telling all one's heart. Wow, ordinary courage. Rather than putting our life on the line, we put our vulnerability on the line, speaking openly and honestly about who we are, where we're at, and all that goodness. Sounds heroic to me, for sure. All right, next big idea, a deep sense of love plus belonging. Quote, after collecting thousands of stories, I'm willing to call this a fact. This is now in bold. A deep sense of love and belonging is an irreducible need of all women, men, and children. End bold. We are biologically, cognitively, physically, and spiritually wired to love, to be loved, and to belong. When those needs are not met, we don't function as we were meant to. We break, we fall apart, we numb, we ache, we hurt others, we get sick. There are certainly other causes of illness, numbing and hurt, but the absence of love and belonging will always lead to suffering. End quote. Love and belonging is at the heart of wholehearted living. Powerful passage above. Let's look at Brené's definition of love, which is the next big idea. What is love? Quote, it took me 3 years to whittle these definitions and concepts from a decade of interviews. Let's take a look. Love. We cultivate love when we allow our most vulnerable and powerful selves to be deeply seen and known, and when we honor the spiritual connection that grows from that offering with trust, respect, kindness, and affection. Love is not something we give or get. It is something that we nurture and grow, a connection that can only be cultivated between two people when it exists within each one of them. We can only love others as much as we love ourselves. Shame, blame, disrespect, betrayal, and the withholding of affection damage the roots from which love grows. Love can only survive these injuries if they are acknowledged, healed, and rare. End quote. How about that for a definition of love? So much goodness in there. The whole passage is worth a reread, a re-listen, or three. These lines particularly move me. Love is not something we give or get. It is something that we nurture and grow. Reminds me of the wisdom that it's not about falling in love. That's easy. It's about standing in love. Falling in love vis-a-vis standing in love. Standing in love takes work plus practice. The other line that really grabs me, a connection that can only be cultivated between two people when it exists within each one of them. We can only love others as much as we love ourselves. So Brené comes back to this theme many times in her work. We can't give what we don't have, period. Which is why cultivating courage, compassion, and connection within ourselves is such an important part of the process of being able to more fully offer to those we love. Here's to practicing love. One way to do that with ourselves is to move from being a perfectionist to a good enoughist. Quote, as a recovering perfectionist and aspiring good enoughist, I found it extremely helpful to bust some of the myths about perfectionism. Perfectionism is not the same thing as striving to be your best. Perfectionism is not self-improvement. Healthy striving is self-focused. How can I improve? Perfectionism is other-focused. What will they think? Understanding the difference between healthy striving and perfectionism is critical to laying down the shield and picking up your life. Research shows that perfectionism hampers success. In fact, it's often the path to depression, anxiety, addiction, and life paralysis. Life paralysis refers to all of the opportunities we miss because we're too afraid to put anything out in the world that could be imperfect. It's also all of the dreams that we don't follow because of our deep fear of failing, making mistakes, and disappointing others. It's terrifying to risk when you're a perfectionist. Your self-worth is on the line. End quote. So let's note, perfectionism is not about striving to be your best and looking to optimize your life. It is the thought that, quote, if I look perfect, live perfectly, and do everything perfectly, I can avoid or minimize the painful feelings of shame, judgment, and blame, end quote. Brené goes into more detail on the paralyzing effects of perfectionism in her book. Check out the book for more on that, along with our note on Tal Ben-Shahar's great book, The Pursuit of Perfect. His top advice? Embrace the constraints of reality. Know that your ideals are guiding stars, not distant shores. and become what he calls an optimalist. Next big idea, warning, not living authentically is dangerous. Quote, if you're like me, practicing authenticity can feel like a daunting choice. There's risk involved in putting your true self out in the world. But I believe there's even more risk in hiding yourself and your gifts from the world. Our unexpressed ideas, opinions, and contributions don't just go away. They're likely to fester and eat away at our worthiness. I think we should be born with a warning label similar to the ones on cigarette packages. Caution, if you trade in your authenticity for safety, you may experience the following. Anxiety, depression, eating disorders, addiction, rage, blame, resentment, and inexplicable grief. End quote. I love that. Well, not the last part, but just the idea that we should be born with a warning label. Not living authentically is dangerous. Reminds me of Russell Simmons' mojo from his great book, Do You. Check out those notes, where he tells us, your purpose is to act on the resources God gives you. If God gives you a bucket of fish, you have to distribute those fish. If you don't, they're going to rot, attract a bunch of flies, and start stinking up your soul. Joseph Campbell echoes this wisdom. He tells us, to refuse the call means stagnation. What you don't experience positively, you will experience negatively. Here's to the courage to hand out those fish and answer the call as we practice authenticity. All right, two more big ideas. Gratitude as a practice is the next one. Quote, one of the most profound changes in my life happened when I got my head around the relationship between gratitude and joy. I always thought that joyful people were grateful people. I mean, why wouldn't they be? They have all of that goodness to be grateful for. But after spending countless hours collecting stories about joy and gratitude, three powerful patterns emerged. Without exception, every person I interviewed who described living a joyful life or who described themselves as joyful actively practiced gratitude and attributed their joyfulness to their gratitude practice. When it comes to gratitude, the word that jumped out at me throughout the research process is practice. I don't necessarily think another researcher would have been so taken aback. But as someone who thought that knowledge was more important than practice, I found these words to be a call to action. End quote. Practice. There's that magical word again. Practice, practice, practice. Parenthetical, practice, practice, practice. Joyful people make gratitude a practice. They appreciate the amazing things in their lives right now. What is amazing in your life? How about celebrating these little treasures with a regular gratitude journaling or reflection? Make it a practice. And that leads us to our final big idea. This is a good one. Joy equals the good mood of the soul. Quote, Ann Robertson, a Methodist pastor, writer, and executive director of the Massachusetts Bible Society, explains how the Greek origins of the words happiness and joy hold important meaning for us today. She explains that the Greek word for happiness is makarios, which was used to describe the freedom of the rich from normal cares and worries, or to describe a person who received some form of good fortune, such as money or health. Robertson compares this to the Greek word for joy, which is kairo. Kairo is described by the ancient Greeks as the culmination of being and the good mood of the soul. Robertson writes, kairo is something the ancient Greeks tell us that is found only in God and comes with virtue and wisdom. It isn't a beginner's virtue. It comes as the culmination. They say its opposite is not sadness, but fear. End quote. Good mood of the soul. Are you kidding me? That's amazing. And so is the rest of that passage. Kairo is something, the ancient Greeks tell us, that is found only in God and comes with virtue and wisdom. It isn't a beginner's virtue. It comes as the culmination. They say its opposite is not sadness, but fear. Joy is not a beginner's virtue. It comes as the culmination of years of practice. Its opposite, not sadness, but fear. Another wow. Here's to doing the little things diligently, patiently, persistently, and playfully as we cultivate courage, compassion, and connection that help us live wholeheartedly and put our soul in a wonderfully good mood. Well, there you go. That's a quick look at this great book. I hope you dug it. If you liked this note, I think you'll also like the note on Brené's Daring Greatly, The Pursuit of Perfect, Do You, A Joseph Campbell Companion, and a bunch of other ones. Check out Brené at brenébrown.com. As you know at this point, I think she's awesome. Let's take a look at those sidebar quotes, and then we'll wrap it up. All right, Brené tells us, owning our story and loving ourselves through that process is the bravest thing that we will ever do. I'll repeat that. Owning our story and loving ourselves through that process is the bravest thing that we will ever do. It's a good thing to keep in mind as we cultivate compassion for ourselves. It's heroic, ordinary courage to own our story. Brené also tells us, how much we know and understand ourselves is critically important, but there is something that is even more essential to living a wholehearted life, loving ourselves. She tells us, the universe is not short on wake-up calls. We're just quick to hit the snooze button. She also tells us, to practice courage, compassion, and connection is to look at life and the people around us and say, I'm all in. E.E. Cummings tells us, to be nobody but yourself in a world which is doing its best night and day to make you everybody but yourself means to fight the hardest battle which any human being can fight and never stop fighting. Back to Brené. Here's what is truly at the heart of wholeheartedness. Worthy now. Not if, not when. We're worthy of love and belonging now. Right this minute. As is. Marianne Williamson tells us, joy is what happens to us when we allow ourselves to recognize how good things really are. Brené tells us, it is in the process of embracing our imperfections that we find our truest gifts, courage, compassion, and connection. Adela Rogers St. John's tells us, joy seems to me a step beyond happiness. Happiness is a sort of atmosphere you can live in sometimes when you're lucky. Joy is a light that fills you with hope and faith and love. And finally, Howard Thurman says, don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. Amen to that. Well, here's to owning our story, daring greatly, and really appreciating the gifts of imperfection, courage, compassion, and connection as we live wholeheartedly and find a way to bring in all of her other keywords. All right. Hope you dug it. As always, think about the big idea that really resonated, jumped out. You said, aha, that's awesome. What was it? The most powerful one. Not the one you think you should have been inspired by, but the one that actually landed. Think about that. Integrate it into your life more. How do you do that? That's what this is all about. Theory is rudimentary. The advanced work is the practice. How do we apply these ideas to our lives more and more consistently and do the practice that we talked about in this note? All right. Hope you dug it. Have an awesome day. Look forward to sharing more soon. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to brianjohnson.me to download more.